Today is July 18th, 2018, and this is episode number 471 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I am in desperate need of my milkman delivery. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can join us over at facebook.com/groups/context machine.
So I'm pretending that, or at least interpreting for myself, that your desperate need of your milkman delivery is code for something.
No, I haven't had my ice latte for the day. And as we know, I am a pretty princess when it comes to, I need my, so, you know, I make the ice latte. Actually, I put the milk in the freezer, similar to putting the lotion on the, in the basket, put the milk in the freezer so that it mostly freezes. And then I pull my espresso and I mix it with my Irish cream sweetener, usually sometimes a little French vanilla maybe, and then stick that in the freezer so that I can then have my iced latte that is not diluted with water from melting ice.
Wow.
It is so much better that way, but it's cold and it remains cold the whole time. And it's like, it's perfect. Like if I leave it like in for about an hour, but here's the thing, dude, I have no milk in the house, man. I have no milk in the house, which means I've had no iced latte today. And yet here we are recording. It's like I'm an animal.
It is a lot like that. If it's any consolation, very similar. I don't have any milk in my house either.
But that's probably for the best.
It is probably for the best. Actually, that's not completely true. There is half a stick of actual cow's milk butter in my refrigerator, and it's not
someone,
for me.
Like, so someone put an assassination order out on you?
Yeah, well, I had friends over for dinner like a month ago.
Yeah.
And so this stick of butter was brought along, and so
someone else brought it to your house for their dish.
Right. And when everything was said and done, they're like, well, we still have this half stick of butter. How about if we just leave it here so that next time it's waiting? And I'm like, well, that's fine. You know, there will be exactly that much whenever you come over, no matter how many years in the future it could potentially be.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yay. Old butter. That's good. Of course, you know, the whole point of butter is to actually preserve.
Yeah. It's supposed to, it's like making calories. Cheese. You're preserving. Yeah.
Yeah.
So as someone that literally cannot have dairy, do I need to do anything with this half a stick of butter to make sure that it stays in as good a condition as it possibly can? Because it's just, and it's, you know, it's kind of this, it's this kind of waxy paper thing that it's wrapped in. Does that sound right?
Yeah, no, it'll be fine.
And it's just, I mean, sitting, you know, in there.
It'll be fine. I mean, the realities will probably never be used. And that's this week time in Brian and Jeff's fridge.
That's right.
I tell you what, we have some Apple topics today too, I think.
We do?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, great. Okay.
We do. And I have confidence. Last week we gave one of them short shrift. Right. This week though, I think we're going to get to all of them. So we're going to talk about inconsistencies in Apple's interface.
Okay.
We're going to talk about people taking us to task for taking Apple to task over storage prices in the new MacBook Pros.
How meta. Okay.
Yeah, and then we're going to talk about Walmart, one of my favorite topics.
Yeah, I bet you're ready to rush out and buy some stuff for cheap.
Yeah, I sure am. I sure am. So why don't we take it right from the top?
Okay. So what, we want to talk about the whole interface thing.
Yeah. Well, how did this start? It started for something. It started somehow.
It started with a complaint, as so many things often do. And yeah, and I can't remember exactly how it started, but it led to talking about Apple's interface elements. And what it started from? I remember now. We both want to have Force Touch on our iPads, and it's really frustrating that we have a different way of interacting on screen with our iPhones and iPads. And yeah, then there's the touch thing.
That's not how it started. I mean, it's how it started in the past, but that's not how this particular conversation started. But that's irrelevant, because that's certainly a fine jumping off point.
Okay.
Well, if I was supposed to go along with you, by the way, I'm sorry. Just failed.
You totally blew it. Man, you know, and I'd say it's clearly because you're being a pretty princess and you haven't had your...
I haven't had my iced latte, man.
I haven't had any tea yet today either.
You don't even drink. You drink like milk of magnesia, man. You drink that chai stuff.
I do drink chai, but you know, it's hot enough now that doing like an iced soy chai just feels kind of heavy.
Yeah, so sure.
I'm on my favorite classic fallback. Iced tea, you know, just like plain old black tea,
mm-hmm.
unsweetened.
Like an animal. All right. So Apple does this thing. Yeah. All right. So it. Okay. Once upon a time.
Uh-huh. I'm going back. In the land of pretty princesses.
In the land of pretty princesses, where they all get their freaking iced lattes when they should. One of the beautiful things about the Mac, and of course, you know, Apple was essentially a one platform company, the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Things were consistent from Mac to Mac, from software to software. Apple did a really good job of enforcing third-party compliance with Mac standards.
They had a whole book. I had it for a while. It was awesome. Apple Human Interface Guidelines.
Yeah, right. And I mean, like, you know, it was always interesting. So back in the late mid-90s, actually mid and late 90s, I was doing some support. I was working with the company that did some that did Windows and Mac support, and every once in a while I would end up talking to Mac user or talking to Windows users.
Mm-hmm.
And it was real interesting to me, because they didn't ever use keyboard shortcuts. They didn't use Control-C and Control-V for copy and paste. Right? They would take their mouse and they'd go up to the wherever the menu was, and the menu could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, you see, at the top of every window, right? So to be at the top of every window, they go to, you know, maybe the file menu or the edit menu or whatever menu copy and paste might be in that particular app. And then they would, you know, choose it, and then they would go back up and they would do it again to paste. And, you know, they didn't use keyboard shortcuts. They would quit apps with their mice. They would save files with their mice. They would, you know, maybe type out a name, but to get to that dialogue, they were using their mouse. They would close a window with their mouse. They mm-hmm. would select all with their mouse. Like, you know, like often starting at the top of a document and then, you know, dragging their mouse as far as they needed to select everything that they had to. And it was always really interesting to me because, you know, as a Mac user, I'm you know, command Z, X, C, V, A, S, D, F, G, H, Q, W, R. And yeah, those in particular are just part of my motor muscle memory. And I use them throughout the day. And I have I have for many, for, you know, decades.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because Apple always made sure they did, you know, that everything was the same. It insisted that those particular keys in particular were always used for the system commands that they mapped to. And what I found out was that Microsoft wasn't enforcing that. So Command A might not always be select all. I'm using that as an example. Excuse me, Control A might not always be select all on Windows. Control Q might not be, probably actually was not going to be, you know, exiting an app.
Right.
Are you with me there?
Yep, I'm with you. It's just Windows is so confusing sometimes.
Well, I mean, you know, this is, I'm going back a long time.
I know. Yeah, I know.
So much better today, for sure. But my point is that part of it, actually, there are two elements of that. One is Apple's use of the command key, where you can use your thumb for all these things. Right. So right. Bob talked about this. After I talked to Bob about my theory about all this, he put that in his productivity book, which is a great book. You can stick a note in the show notes, a link in the show notes to that book. But he talks about it, where the thumb is so much more natural for hitting all those keys I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
To do those same keys with the control, you've got to use your pinky on the control key, and it's much less comfortable, much less convenient, much less comfortable.
Right. Yep.
And I noticed one more little anecdote about this particular rabbit hole. I used to play a game called Myth.
Oh yeah, I never played it, but I remember the game.
Bungie's game, not Myst,
not Marathon, not.
No, yeah, but no. What was Myst? Was the sequel to
Myst? Was the original?
Oh, it was the original puzzle that fine crap game, right? Myst was a completely different game by Bungie. It was just this fantastic game. So you would have groups of soldiers, and you could make groups. And on the Mac, you would make groups by selecting your units, and then doing like holding down command 1 through 0.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have up to 10 groups of troops that you could then just call with the keyboard shortcut instead of actually having to go and find them on the map, because the map was larger than your screen. Well, what I found in playing the game, because it was multi-platform, is that Windows users almost never did that, because for them it was control 1 through 0, and it's such an unnatural movement.
Huh.
That they did never do it. They never used keyboard shortcuts. This was like super consistent.
So at least they did have consistency. And I said they didn't use keyboard shortcuts.
Exactly. So I always thought that was like this great strength of the Mac, that the human interface guidelines were this huge Apple strength and this huge strength for the Mac, and that consistency, like, you know, quit always being in the right place, command Q always being the thing, command Z always being undo, command C always being copy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. was this huge strength.
Yeah, I'm with you. It made it so easy to learn apps, because except for specific things that each app did, you already knew how to use the apps.
Yeah, you already knew all, yeah, right, what you just said. And I feel like in the last few years in particular, that we have been straying from this idea that things work the same way across all of Apple's devices.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, of course, is because an iPhone is not a Mac. An iPad is not a Mac. I get that. Right. Apple Watch is not a Mac, it turns out. And also, this may be news to some people, an Apple TV is also not a Mac.
Huh.
Yeah. You might need to make some notes on that.
Hold on. TV, not a Mac.
Right. But there are... there are some features that work across devices, but they don't work the same way across devices, and they don't even have the same name. And that would be Force Touch and 3D Touch.
Yes. And to this day, I cannot remember which is which.
I can't remember either. And that's actually, that's a problem to me. The fact that we can't remember. One of them is on some iPhones, and one of them is on Apple's tripod.
All right. So
Magic tripod.
Okay. So Force Touch is trackpad. So 3D Touch is iPhones.
Yeah. It should have been called the same thing on both. Can't even understand a little bit why it's not. And then of course, 3D Touch was never brought to the iPhone. So you don't even have the feature, to iPad. So you don't even have that feature on, and is it on iPhone 10? I forget.
Yeah.
It is? Okay.
I use Force Touch / 3D Touch, whatever it is. See, I looked it up. I closed the window and I already can't remember. I think 3D Touch is the phones.
3D Touch is the phones. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we still have it for now, at least. But so there's an inconsistency. And then we have some things that this might have been the thing that actually started this conversation, Jeff, was we were talking about iPad and how we wanted the iPhone 10 gestures to work on iPad, even though iPad still has a home button. Like, why can't we have, I love the way iPhone 10 works. I want my iPad to work the same way. And and don't get me wrong. I realize that iPad has the home button, and we're probably going to lose that in the next rev of iPads.
That seems likely.
But why can't I go ahead and thumb scroll up from the bottom of my iPad to go back to the home screen? That's a great gesture.
It is.
In iPhone 10.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't have those gestures.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not like it. I don't think it interferes with anything. Maybe we're just missing something on that. But it seems like you should be able to swipe up from the bottom on iPhone 8, iPhone 8 Plus, iPhone 7, iPads. It's such a great gesture. Mm-hmm. And that inconsistency to me is makes for a less cohesive and coherent ecosystem, and I would really like Apple to sort of be focused on that again. And Touch Bar, I guess, would be another thing, like that we don't have Touch Bar.
Yeah, it's weird to have the Touch Bar just on the MacBook Pro.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a feature that I totally get why a lot of developers don't support. Why would you take the resources to add Touch Bar support when the majority of your customers most likely don't even have that hardware?
Right, and there's no telling if Apple's going to continue to support it.
Right. But at least pushing on something with more pressure, that's something that developers can support more because there's a lot of iPhone users out there. But man, if we could have it on the iPad as well, because right now, what do you do? You just have to kind of poke and press and flick and stuff to try and figure out what you can do in any app. Yeah. There's no consistency.
Well, and I'm wondering if that's not because Steve Jobs was the one who was manic about consistency.
Well, on one hand, I can agree. But on the other hand, there were lots of interface inconsistencies when Steve Jobs was there. And the big one that I've brought up more than once is GarageBand, where you click the red button to close the window, but it actually quits the app.
I hear you, but that is not necessarily inconsistent with my thesis, because Steve Jobs didn't use GarageBand.
But
if he did, I don't think that would have been the case.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Well, then why?
Because Steve Jobs only cared about the things he cared about.
Yeah. So are you saying that the only person at Apple that made sure that there was quality and consistency between products was Steve Jobs?
I'm saying that's a really interesting question, Jeff. What I'm saying is that Steve Jobs had a particular gift for the finest details, the kinds of details that get missed by other people. And that without him and without someone with not only that gift, but the power to enforce corrections to what they see as something that's inferior, that is why we're seeing more and more drift.
Yeah. All right. That's possible. But it just feels like we had a lot of drift happening before Steve left. And GarageBand is just the easy example that I bring up. But it felt like there were so many apps that Apple was making, and even things they're doing in their own interfaces at the system level, where it just felt like it wasn't consistent.
Well, yeah, maybe I have. I'm perfectly willing to admit that I may have a little bit of revisionist, rose-colored glasses on Apple of the past. And furthermore, a lot of this may simply be the necessity of greater complexity relating to having a broader product line. Because, again, turns out that Apple TVs aren't Macs and things like that. But I don't know. I bet you this is another one of those things where our listeners can say, well, what about this and this and this and this? You guys aren't thinking about this and this and this because, blah, blah, blah. And this is not, by the way, this is not like some kind of Apple is doomed conversation or, like Apple sucks today because I don't have 3D touch on my iPad. It's nothing like that. I lament the lack of consistency. And I always thought that was a strong suit for Apple and a strong selling point for Apple.
Your potential revisionist history, which I don't really think is in this case, there's precedent for that, because I recall several years ago, there was a thing where people that were involved in early Mac interface development were saying that Apple had abandoned their own internal guidelines for interface. So here's one for you. How about using the Notes app on your Mac?
What about it? I've used it.
Does it feel like a Mac interface to you?
No, it feels like an iOS app sticking on my Mac.
Yeah. So, maybe Apple is deciding now that they're getting back into consistency, but the consistency that they have chosen to embrace comes from iOS.
Well, that's true, except for iOS isn't consistent either. You do have those interface differences between devices and the features that are inconsistent.
Yeah. I didn't say it was a perfect solution. But yeah, it is frustrating because it just feels like the things that we used to take for granted, where something just worked and we knew how it just worked, that hasn't been the case for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right. So while we're on the topic of listeners taking us to task.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners took us to task. Let's see here. Actually, Tom Byrne basically agreed with us about MacBook Pro 2018 prices. Said get a Surface 2. This won't get better. Nope.
Well, that doesn't sound like he took us to task.
No, he didn't take us to task. He agreed with us about Apple's pricing and suggested we get a Surface Book 2. I personally am not going to do that because I am firstly mostly pleased with the MacBook Pro 2018 update. And secondly, Mac still beats Windows, in my opinion. Not even close.
You know, I've played with Surface devices and the Surface tablets, I mean, they're okay. There wasn't anything about them where I thought, holy crap, this is amazing. It's just, yeah, that's a functional tablet.
Yeah.
On the desktop, though, oh, good God, what a disaster.
How long ago is this?
Well, within the last few months, even.
Okay.
I have a friend that has the Surface Studio. And the nice thing I can say about it is that the display is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is a total crap storm. It's
yeah, fair enough. I've heard similar complaints about the studio.
Yeah. And
all right,
so I'm not going to switch to Surface anything because that doesn't suit my needs. But I can get why, if it's the right tool for someone, they'd be happy to have it. Just like, you know, my various iPads and my Mac are the right tools for different things.
All fair points. So Elliot Brown, however, took us to task. He said that we should not compare the retail price of a standalone SSD drive to Apple's upgrade pricing within MacBook Pro because of rewrite speeds and performance. And the problem there is that the cap on read-write performance on a standalone SSD is coming from the interface. It's the SATA interface. The chips may or may not be, and we don't actually know this, but the chips may or may not be the same chips other than the interface chip. Mm. But so that roadblock, of course, you know, that said, it is certainly possible that even on the high end standalone SSDs that the chips being used inside them are not as good as what Apple's using simply because they're matching the chips to the interface speed.
Yeah. Definitely.
Right. That makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. So definitely taking the SATA bridge out of the mix gives you an immediate performance improvement, regardless of how the chips are designed.
Yeah, maybe unless the flash chips that they're using in those SATA drives is actually like just not capable of the faster speeds, but I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, well, I could see where a company could save money and not necessarily in a bad way, like we're cheating customers, but could save money by choosing chips that really don't perform.
Yeah, they just the meet a lower spec. The
bridge.
Yeah, they meet a lower spec.
Yeah,
but it is. Elliot's right that it's not an apples to apples comparison. Comparing a standalone SSD to whatever Apple is doing.
Yeah, and flash storage is typically going to be faster across the board than an SSD. That
yes,
yeah. So all right, I'm totally with Elliot. It's not a fair comparison.
It's not a fair comparison, but it's also not as out of the ballpark as I mean the numbers don't tell the whole story either. So like his point, for instance, was that your typical SSD is going, what I think, at 540 megabytes. So it's probably megabits, isn't it?
Megabytes per second.
Megabytes per second. It is megabytes per second. For and 540 and 520 for read and writes on the standalone SSDs, whereas Apple is getting up to, like, with the new iteration, 3.2 and 2.2 gigabytes per second, which is a stark difference. But
stark difference. That's a beautiful way to put it.
But that difference is stemming from the extra chip and the interface. It's not. That comparison still is simple.
Well, you're assuming that the difference is that it doesn't have that SATA bridge, and that's the only difference.
Well, no. I'm acknowledging that there may also be additional differences. Okay. The specs on the chips that Apple is using for its MacBook Pro processors, excuse me, MacBook Pro storage, may well simply be better than the chips on any standalone SSD drive. That is certainly possible. And if that turned out to be the case, then my freaking out about Apple's pricing is not justified.
All right. So, listeners, some of you know the tech details and all of this. Fill us in so that Brian can decide if he needs to do a public mea culpa on the show, or if he can do his thing.
Well, I actually assume at this point, having, you know, A, been able to put another week's worth of thought into it, and B, having been able to put another week's worth of thought into it, that I am wrong on at least some of the merits of my being angry about this.
All right. So, listeners,
the Apple's chips are probably Apple's chips are probably, we don't know for sure, but they are probably meeting higher specs. And this is based in part on the fact that Apple does all the time. Apple is often using components with higher specs than your typical off the shelf PC components.
And that makes sense because Apple is doing the whole widget.
And your guy, you covered that thing this morning. Is it Dave Lee's?
Yeah. Yes. The thermal throttling on the Core i9 processor.
Yes.
I liked the video. It's very compelling. And on its surface, it's very damning for Apple. But at the same time, I'm holding back judgment because he was testing with. So backing up just a bit, David Lee did his Core i9 MacBook Pro review as a YouTube video, and he found that when he was doing his tests, that because of the heat that was being generated, the processor was throttling itself so it wouldn't literally melt. And it was throttling itself back to the base speed for
the couldn't even maintain price. The base speed.
I'm not done yet. Base speed for the lower price 15-inch MacBook Pro, which is well below its own base speed.
Got it. Sorry.
Yeah. So,
let alone hitting the burst speeds.
Right. So the thing is, when he did his test, and he was using the right tools for the test, but he was testing it with Adobe Premiere. And it's no secret that Adobe does not optimize their apps for the Mac. And Premiere is certainly a bad player in that space. So you already have an application that is just going to try and kick your computer to its knees anyhow. And isn't, in this case, taking advantage of what the processor can do. So the processor has to slow down. The other thing that we don't have is the same test performed with multiple apps. All we're seeing is Adobe Premiere, and he does this thing where he puts the computer in the freezer and he gets a massive performance boost, which totally makes sense because he's negating a lot of the thermal issues. But we don't have a thorough test here. We have one computer, we have one application, and we
So the single application issue is certainly justified, but it doesn't take away from the reality that Apple's own form factor imposes limitations that keep the i9 processor from being all that it can be.
Yes, but also we have this done on one single computer. I want to see the same thing
done. That's a good point too.
On multiple i9s that are spec'd exactly the same as David's, because there's also the possibility that there's a manufacturing flaw in his specific unit. So I am more than happy to say, holy crap, this is a situation where Apple really is putting customers in a bind because they are trying to meet an aesthetic over the performance that pros need. But before I do that, I want to see more tests on his computer with other apps, and I want to see more tests on matching computers that are not his. And then let's compare the results.
All fair points. I won't nitpick any of those things. Now, the reason why we're mentioning it in this particular discussion is because he also said that the read-write performance he was getting from the storage in his Mac Pro was faster than anything else he's ever seen.
Yes. Yeah, he was blown away by that.
Yeah, so that actually, again, speaks to there being more to this than my initial knee-jerk frustration and annoyance warrants.
Yeah, it's still a computer that I'm very interested in, even though I'm not actually in the market to buy a new Mac right now. But I want to see more. I want to see more speed tests, both for read and write, as well as overall performance. It's a compelling machine, but it's also a controversial machine right now.
It is indeed. Craig Reynolds, by the way, wrote in, I think he's asking, I'm not actually sure, but I think he's asking if maybe I think that Apple's high storage costs are to cover shoplifting in the Apple stores. But he points out, by the way, that OWC has 2 terabyte replacement drives on a stick for 2015 MacBook Pros, and that they're just under $1,200, which is the same price that Apple's charging.
Oh, okay.
Except it's not really the same price that Apple's charging, because Apple is charging $1,200 more.
That's right. So you're paying an additional $1,200, and you
don't get the
old SSD or flash drive.
Right. Right. As opposed to the replacement. The replacement, the $1,200 that the OWC is charging. Nonetheless, I mean, and that would be like, for instance, if OWC's pricing is representative of real margins, and like Apple isn't gouging us on its internal storage, that would be about the price difference that Apple is normally charged. Apple has always overcharged for RAM and storage, especially for the economies of scale that they can employ. I mean, they have always overcharged us for these things, going back to Steve Jobs, going back to before Steve Jobs.
Right.
So, back, I mean,
when we had a soda pop guy running the company.
Exactly. So, I mean, this is no My point is that so like what am I trying to say? You add $1,200 for Apple's pricing, but you're going from what, 256 to 2 terabytes? Is that right? Am I getting that right?
Apple's,
or is it 512?
Apple specs. You have a 256 and a 512 in the base models, and then you can go 1 terabyte, 2 terabyte, 4 terabyte. After that,
right? So that actually is about the level that Apple's normally overcharges about, like, or charge more than the market by about 25%.
Yeah, and
so you know that actually again is further fuzzy.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to address the shoplifting part real quick. No, the SSD is not priced where it is to cover shoplifting. Shrinkage, which can happen internally and externally. Yes, I used to work retail, is of course an issue, and it's something that is addressed in overall product pricing. So it's not a specific component that you look at. It's after you take into account your manufacturing costs of a product, then you do your margins after that, which include what you want for profit and what you're going to use to account for shrinkage. And honestly, most of your shrinkage comes from employees.
Employees, yeah.
Not from people breaking into stores.
Yeah, or stuff. People walking out with stuff in Apple stores. Apple's security system that they've got within this sort of, like, we actually trust our customer system in the Apple stores is, like, if you try to walk out with something, you're going to be nabbed.
Yeah, they trust you to do the right thing, but they're willing
to... They're going to stop you if you don't. which is great. I mean, that's the way it should be. I mean, like, that's the right balance.
Yeah,
that's the right balance.
You know, and I have never had a problem in an Apple store going in and buying something using my iPhone in their app and walking out. And I know it's because even though I had the one greeting when I walked in, which, by the way, is excellent for stopping shoplifting because you've acknowledged the person's in the store. They know they're not.
Oh, yeah.
That's the real reason why you want to greet everyone that comes in a store.
Sure.
But, you know, I can walk in, they say hi, I go right to the thing that I want to buy, pick up the cable, because, you know, Apple's cables break all the time, scan it, throw it in my bag, and walk out the door. And no one has ever said a word. No one's asked to see
receipts. You know, I am always tempted. Yeah, of course they do. Right. Well, they're watching. I mean, the Apple stores are highly surveilled. And they have plainclothes people in there too that are security. Mm-hmm. And I'm if I was a braver person and I am too prone to needing to follow the rules. If I wasn't so driven by that, I would like to go into an Apple store, go through the motions as if I'm paying for something, but not actually pay for it, and then walk out just to see what happens. I would, of course, not actually steal the device. I would go back inside and pay for it, but like if I got away with it. But I would like to see what happens with that, but I just can't do it.
You know, I'm with you. While I would love to see the experiment, I wouldn't do it. And the thing is to do it so that you and I would feel okay doing it. Someone in Apple would need to know we're doing it, which then kills the entire experiment because at that point, it's not something that's happening independent of what Apple already does.
Right. Right. So there is that very interesting discussion. We appreciate the feedback. I'm expecting at this point to just be fully wrong as it is. I'm acknowledging that I am absolutely and positively at least partially wrong to be all pissy about Apple's pricing.
All right. I can't wait to see more tests and I can't wait to hear what readers tell us.
Yeah.
Well, listeners, now you have me doing it, calling the people that listen to the show readers.
Yeah.
They're reading sounds with their ears.
It's a thing. It's a thing that I do.
Yeah. Well, apparently it's contagious.
Right. Which is excellent. So let's see here. Third topic. Walmart. The original great threat to the middle class. The original great threat to quality. The original outsourcer of manufacturing to Asia.
So you're saying they're innovators?
Yeah, well, yeah, actually, they were, quite frankly, innovators. I mean, they're innovating in all the wrong things, in my humble opinion, but it turns out most people didn't ask me, and Walmart didn't ask me.
That's so weird. I really expected that they would call you up and say, Brian,
what do you think, dude?
Model. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. And they're also, they were innovators in opening more stores than an area can support in order to drive out the mom and pops. And then when they've driven out a sufficient number of competitors to then close their excess capacity. That was a huge innovation too.
I don't want this to sound wrong, but that's pretty clever.
It is super clever. It's just wrong. It's just wrong. And it consolidates power into the hands of one company. It has destroyed small town America. It has destroyed the merchant class in not only the States, but elsewhere where Walmart is expanding. And it is a massive threat to the middle class. Like, fine, great. They have all this cheap stuff. But first of all, their quality is in this massive race to the bottom. And second of all that cheap stuff comes at your own expense.
All right. I'm tossing this out there, not to be contrary to what you're saying, because I know Walmart's had a negative impact on a lot of people's lives. Penn and Teller, they had a show for a while. I don't know if they're doing it anymore. And the show was called Penn and Teller's Bullshit. Mm-hmm. They did one on Walmart.
You have to beep that, you know.
No, I don't, because it's a show name.
Yeah, right, fair enough.
Yeah. I actually thought about it before bringing it up to decide, do we have to bleep that? No, we don't. They did one on Walmart, and it's fascinating because, you know, they take a contrary position to what the popular belief is. And their position was Walmart has actually saved small town America. So
I haven't seen their argument, and I would be interested in seeing that argument.
It's a very interesting argument, and I'm not saying I endorse it or disagree with it, but it was just very interesting. So if you get a chance to watch it, you totally should. I think you would, you would enjoy it.
Fair enough. And the reason why we're talking about Walmart is because they...
Oh my God, I forgot we had a different topic about Walmart.
Reportedly. Well, yeah, I'm the one who... Brian, pretty princess thing. They are talking about... They are looking at launching their own streaming service. And the way this was pitched in the information is the website that broke this. The way they're thinking about it is a subscription service to compete with Netflix and Amazon.
So on what level are they competing? Are we talking TV show and movie archives, or are we talking original content?
Well, what I would imagine here, we don't know. What I would imagine is that it would be Vudu, which is VUDU, which is their rental and purchase platform for videos, movies, and TV shows, right? That it would be Vudu, but for streaming. So much more akin to Netflix as opposed to, say, YouTube Live, YouTube TV, Hulu Live, or DirecTV Now.
Okay. So,
you know, we've got this catalog of shows.
Yeah, they already tried it and it failed.
Well, apparently they're looking at trying it again.
Okay, well, maybe they have a different strategy and have learned from their mistakes, whatever those were, that led to the demise of their previous streaming service.
Well, Here's why it's interesting to me. And of course, this obviously, while they would be competing against Netflix and Amazon, they would also be eventually competing against Apple. Sure. And that's why we're talking about it. And so like my gut reaction, the funny thing is to me, I don't know, maybe it's just to me, but my gut reaction, my knee jerk reaction when I saw this story is, can a company with no taste make good content?
That's a good question.
And that, of course, you know, you have to have that discussion. You have to buy into my premise that Walmart has no taste.
Well,
and you may disagree.
Yeah. And I think that there's no reason why they couldn't make compelling content. And it's
no way. There's no way Walmart makes good content, man. No way. No freaking way. Okay. There's no way.
So all of these amazing shows, presumably amazing shows that Apple's lining up for its streaming TV service, how many of those did Apple make? And the answer is none. They made none of the shows, or are making.
Yeah. Show creators will. Yeah.
Yeah. So
there's no way a company driven by Walmart's politics and Walmart's ethos and Walmart's drive to cut corners and cut costs and shaft people over and shaft their own workers. There's no way they're going to be able to put a team together that can make good quality content. No way.
You know, I totally get where you're coming from, but I disagree with you. I think that Walmart could put together a team, go out, because they have bucket loads of money, like crazy bucket loads of money. So they could go out and throw a lot of money at the right people and hire their own team. It won't be the same as Apple's team, because Apple already got those people. But there's a lot of other good people out in the market that they could hire and say, here's your budget. Here are the parameters that we want you to work within. Now get us good content.
Yeah. Not happening. So the thing is, though, that we don't even know if they're going to do original content. Well, so they're wanting to hit a price point that to me suggests they're not going to do original content, because they're thinking about pricing it as low as less than $8, i.e. $7.99.
Okay, then I'm with you. There's no original content happening.
And they may even do, and this is potentially innovative, they may do a free ad-supported version.
Okay.
I don't think anyone's really doing that. Hulu used to do it. That's actually how Hulu launched.
Right.
It was free. Everything was ad supported, and you know you couldn't fast forward to the ads and that sort of thing. But and Hulu may or may not be doing that. I don't actually think they're still doing that. But like all the legit streaming services that I've seen are, or at least that I can think of, they're all paid. So if they could do a quote unquote free ad supported version, especially if they're going to turn around and start, you know, like siphoning up profile things, right? Like, you know, if they're going to Google or Facebook or Amazon you while you're using it, that could end up being profitable and get them a lot of potential viewers.
You know, doing a free tier with ads, that's like a big win for Walmart, because they can charge money to the companies that have products in their stores.
Sure. Yeah. It could be a multi level win for them. But the other thing then would be that if they're not going to do original content, they're not competing with Netflix and Amazon. Sure, Netflix and Amazon have all this other content out there that you can watch, but people are subscribing for the original content.
Maybe we are focusing on the wrong demographic. And yes, I agree with you. Yeah. What if Walmart is looking at a a different demographic, not one that like us that's willing to pay a monthly subscription, multiple monthly subscriptions for original content.
Right.
But maybe they're looking for the demographic that is being more price conscious.
52 different subscriptions. Right. We've talked about feeling that same pressure. We've talked about, and we are by no means wealthy people, we've talked about that pressure of having all these different siloed subscription services producing their own original content, and how we're starting to feel pinched. Mm-hmm. We're starting to feel leaned on.
Yeah. Well, I'm doing the thing where to watch Star Trek Discovery. When season one was close to wrapping up, there was like 3 episodes left. I paid for a month's worth of service. So $10, no commercials. So I could watch the entire season and then canceled my subscription. And I'll do the same thing when season 2 comes out.
Right.
To save money.
And I will eventually get around to watching it in a manner. I will binge it and cancel it. Yeah. So there are all kinds of people who cannot afford or do not want to pay, even if they can afford, for 1,000,000,000 different streaming services, especially as prices are being jacked up. And prices are being jacked up in part because A, they're popular, and B, they're spending all this money on original content. So it's, you know, mm-hmm. it's what you do. So in my opinion, it's not really competition with Netflix and Amazon without original content. And I don't know if they can be successful without original content. I do personally have massive doubts that they could produce compelling original content.
Well, after watching Carpool Karaoke, okay, how do you ahead, feel please. About Apple producing quality original content?
Ah, well, see, that's the thing, right? After Carpool Karaoke, Apple hired Zach and James, right? Is it James?
Maybe, but definitely Zach. But yes, Apple hired the right people. Walmart. That's funny. I said Amazon. Walmart could hire really.
Yeah, good yeah, yeah. Well. I hear you saying that. Well, you will. You know, I'm not holding my breath until Walmart hires the dream team.
They could pick a specific demographic and totally nail it. And what I'm thinking of as a demographic that Walmart could own if they wanted to for original content, look at the breadbasket Christian population.
Sure.
That's a segment of the TV viewing audience that could be better served with shows. So they could go into that space and they could own it, and they could get good people to help them come up with content. But still, at the prices that you're saying they're looking at, there's no original content deals there.
Right. Now we should one more thing to add. Mm-hmm. The story says that they're looking at pricing it as low as less than $8, i.e. $7.99, mm-hmm. but not necessarily that low.
All right, so maybe they have tiers. For free, you can watch the back library of shows with commercials. For $14.99, you get movies and original content.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. And that part we don't know. And the last thing that I kind of had wanted to get into was that Apple's whole gambit on producing all this original content is their backdoor entry into the streaming service that they wanted to be in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Hollywood, the studios, the cable companies, the networks, did not want to give up their control of they didn't want to give Apple control of the customer. And they fought Apple tooth and nail on all of Apple's a la carte stuff, all of Apple's cord cutting projects that Apple has been trying to do forever and a day, even while they were letting other people do it, other companies do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that Apple finally looked at what Netflix did, looked at what Amazon did, and said, we're going to get our own eyeballs, and because we have the eyeballs, we'll be able to get the other streaming content.
Yeah, and
that's my theory.
And with the content that Apple's putting together, it's looking like they're going to have a powerhouse lineup.
Yeah, I think so. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so am I.
All right, we're out of time.
We are. It is so time for us to wrap up. But this time, I really, really am going to hit the right button at the right time. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people. Mac Observer. Bandwidth provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. Recorded just for TMO. And that is all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Got to run down to the milk store.